The story that I like most at Christmas centers on the wise men. Been fascinated with them, still fascinated to this day. And so what I want to do is I want to go through Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 16, and I want to unpack it and kind of give us some insight and background on the Magi. But also at the end of it, and kind of apply it with theological truths. It's not just theological truths, it's systematic theology, which deals with themes that run throughout the Bible. And so I found those within this text this week. And so let's just go and we'll look at it. The Magi from the East. First of all, the Magi in verses 1 and 2. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he who was born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose, and we have come to worship him." So the wise men see the star, and they begin to leave where they live, and they come to Bethlehem to find Jesus. Now, Bethlehem, at the time of Christ, probably was around 300 people. So we're not talking a big place. We're talking actually a very small city. And yet God chose, because of Micah and other verses in the Old Testament, God chose Bethlehem, by the way, which is House of Bread. And I think about Jesus being born in a city named the House of Bread when Jesus said he will be the bread of life. And so anyway... the wise men are focused on Bethlehem, but they come to Jerusalem first. And who they find on the throne is Herod the Great. Herod the Great. In our New Testament introduction, we learned a lot about him. So I just want to kind of give a brief overview of Herod the Great. First of all, his reign was probably 40 to 4 BC. He was appointed by his father to be the commander of Galilee. Now, through a series of events, Herod the Great, with his victories and his military campaign, started impressing people. And so what they did, Rome appointed him and eventually gave him the title King of the Jews. And he ruled Judea. So think about it for a second. You have a earthly king, Herod the Great, who is called King of the Jews. Now you have wise men from the east coming, saying, "Where is he who is born King of the Jews?" So what you have here is a king who is wondering, is my kingdom in trouble? Even though he was supported by Rome, he was friendly with Rome, he was despised by Jews, and I'll tell you why he was in just a few minutes. But here you have this king and wise men who have come and said, "Where is he who is born King of the Jews? For we saw his star and we have come to worship him." And the question arises, where did these wise men come from? The word magi, which is magos in the Greek, refers to magicians. But as time elapsed and as magicians started coming into Babylon, which is where they are from, by the way, and Parthia, the term started losing its significance for magicians and started focusing on astrology. So you have here these wise men who came from Parthia, and they traveled this distance up. Now, they didn't start traveling before they saw the star. They started traveling when they saw the star. So they made the, they looked at the stars and they go, wait a minute, this is a significant event that is taking place. And it was at that point the Magi decided that they needed to follow the star. The journey was about 1,000 miles. So it wasn't like that they got on their camel and they went 100 miles to see this star, to see where this star would stop and where this child would be born. they had to travel 1,000 miles, roughly 1,000 miles, depending on which model you look at. It would have taken them 18 to 24 months by camel to reach Jerusalem. Here's the thing. Most stories and narratives today, they put the wise men at Bethlehem at the stable, when in fact that is actually incorrect. The wise men would have traveled, and I would say, based on what we're going to read in verse 16, I would put the arrival of the Magi probably 22 to 24 months after the star first appeared. Here's the other thing. This was a very dangerous venture, because you'll notice here, they're traveling through very dangerous territory. So the fact that we see three wise men based on three gifts, and we've arrived at the conclusion that there were only three wise men, is probably highly incorrect. They would have needed more travelers than just three wise men. I'm not even sure they would have made the journey just by themselves. One picture that I found probably accurately captures what their travels involved. And it would have involved many traveling with the wise men. You would not have gone across that country with just three wise men. They would have probably been beaten. Everything that they had with them would have been taken. They needed an entourage to go with them. They needed supplies. They needed all these things. And we draw that, we draw just the three wise men off the three gifts. But I don't think that's the case. And most scholars today would agree it would have taken more than just three men traveling this distance to get to Jesus safely. Well, this leaves Herod in a very troubled state, if you will. Herod is troubled in verses 3 through 6, and we read this. When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled. And the word there, troubled, means in turmoil, in real turmoil. And all of Jerusalem with him. And I would say that that's more of leaders. And then he assembles the chief priests and the scribes of the people. He inquired of them where the Christ would be born. Now, here's the king of the Jews, right? The king of the Jews has to ask somebody where this child's going to be born. You would think the leader of Judea and the king of the Jews would know the biblical text and would be able to understand himself. But yet, he was unable to. And so he asked the chief priest and the scribes of the people to find out where Christ would be born. And they told him, Bethlehem of Judea. And they quote Micah 5:2. And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. Now the question arises, why did the people did not like Herod? He was not the people's king. And when you trace the lineage of Herod, you find out that he was from the line of Esau. He was an Edomite. God said that he would establish the line of David. They knew this. They knew this. And Herod then really became despised, because they said, you're not really the king of the Jews. You're an Edomite. You're not from the line of David. And even though Herod did many things for them, actually under Herod, the temple began to be rebuilt. There was nothing that Herod could do that would satisfy the people of Israel, the Jews, because they knew ultimately and finally, you're an Edomite, you're from the line of Esau, no, you are not the rightful king. And even though the scribes, and it's kind of funny, isn't it? The scribes and the elders and the Pharisees, it was interesting that they all came around Herod to give support, because they didn't want the Messiah. Interesting how when there is an issue that they can both agree on, that they will coalesce around one another for their plans and their desires. Then there is the meeting that takes place. Now, notice this. Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. So Herod's trying to type a timeline here. He's trying to figure out when they saw the star and when this child was born. And so he's trying to establish a timeline. And he sent them to Bethlehem. And of course, the king of the Jews says, go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring word back to me that I may go worship him also. How many of us believe that? None of us believe it. So the answer from the wise men would have probably been something like this. When did you first see the star? When did it appear? Oh, about 2 years ago. That's when we started following King Herod. And at this point, I think the wise men believed King Herod that he would go worship. Later, God would say, uh-uh. But this word worship, proskuo, it means to lay down in reverence. If you want a word picture, here it is. How many of us believe here that this is what Herod would have done in front of the baby Jesus or the child Jesus? None of us believe that. And by the way, might I add, this is worship at its core. Now the Magi in 9 and 12, after listening to the king, they went their way. And behold, the star they had seen when it rose went before them until it came over the place where the child, not baby. Matthew was a tax collector, but I can tell you he does know the difference between an infant and a child. So the wise men did not arrive until at least 2 years after the star and after the birth of Christ. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the stable, no. Look at what the text says. Going into the house. So this was already after the birth of Jesus. They had removed the child, and now the child was living in Bethlehem in a house, not a stable. They saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down, and they really worshiped him. The wise men must have laid down, because it's the same word, they must have laid down before the baby Jesus, or before the child. I keep saying baby Jesus, but child. Child Jesus, they laid down and they worshiped him. By the way, I think the worship narrative is all through here, because this is the importance of worship of the king. Then opening their treasures, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And being warned not to return to Herod, they departed for their own country by another way. So, here we have the Bethlehem, from Jerusalem to Bethlehem, about 5 miles. Here's some thoughts. Stars naturally travel east to west. And of course, the Earth's rotation, but the stars normally go east to west. Here, we have a star that is traveling north to south. This is north, this is south, traveling this way. Stars normally go this way, but this star, this makes me wonder something. And the scholars are now beginning to wake up to this. Is it possible that this is the Shekinah glory of God? A pillar of fire by night and a cloud by day. God will direct them. This would not be uncommon for God to say, follow me and I will direct you to where the child is to be born. Again, just a quick reminder, the wise men came at least 2 years after Jesus had already been born. Jesus is a child, or actually, if you want to know the paidong, paidong is the Greek word for child, and it means a young child between the age or below the age of puberty, probably 18 to 24 months old. Now we have a timeline very specifically attached. It's 18 to 24 months. And I'm guessing based on Herod's response that he believed it was probably in the range of 22 to 24 months. Now the gifts that they brought, gold, worthy of a king. Worthy of a king. In fact, most kings had a lot of gold. And they tried to get as much as they possibly could. Second gift, frankincense, very expensive. It was also used in temple worship in Exodus 30, 34. It was a fragrant aroma. Now, isn't this is what I believe part of Jesus's life was a fragrant aroma to the Father. So here they are giving this child gold. They are giving them frankincense. And by the way, you could sell frankincense and boy, you could get a lot of money for it. A lot of money. Myrrh was used in embalming. It had a bitter taste and may point to the cross, but it too was also used in temple worship. And if you look at the projection, gold for the birth of the king. His life would be an aroma, a fragrant aroma to God, but it would also end bitterly on the cross for Christ. I believe the wise men, through the influence of God, actually gave us a snapshot at the life of Jesus. But there was a second, more practical reason for the wise men's gifts. And this is often overlooked. I think it probably financed their time in Egypt. Here you have three very expensive. God provided for his child. So when they got into Egypt, they didn't have to worry about finances. You start running low on money, you sell the gold. You start running low, which they probably wouldn't have because you could get a lot of money for it. Frankincense, you would sell that. If you needed to sell a little bit of it, you could sell it. They were fine. They were fine. And then we see that there is the flight to Egypt in verses 13 to 15. Now, when they had departed, that is the wise men, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, rise, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt and remain there until you hear that Herod is dead, for he is seeking to destroy the child. And he rose and took the child and his mother by night and departed to Egypt, and they remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet, out of Egypt I called my son. Now, we look at a map here, and we see that Bethlehem to Egypt is really not all that far, and depending on where they stayed, you're looking at roughly about a 90 to 120 mile journey into Egypt, not far into Egypt. So you figure at most they traveled 120 miles. But there's something else going on here. And I think it's significant. Particularly when those are mentioned, the frankincense, gold, myrrh. Here you have Joseph and Mary with child. I like this image because it shows Jesus much bigger. What you have here is Hosea 11. When Israel was a child, I loved him, and out of Egypt I called my son. So Matthew is actually interpreting Hosea 11:1. And Hosea 11:1 is a reminder that God delivered the nation of Israel from bondage, and they left Egypt out of bondage. What Jesus is doing, what God is doing, is he's going back to Egypt to, and then when Herod dies, he is going to pull the nation again, this time out of bondage spiritually. Wow. And God provided for their needs, and just as God delivered the nation of Israel from bondage, so Jesus will deliver his people from bondage. Of course, we go back to the king now. Herod's anger. Then Herod, when he saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, became furious. And he sent and killed all male children in Bethlehem in that region that were 2 years and under. Herod had the timeline established. He knew that Jesus was no longer a baby. He also knew and probably had spies telling him that the child's probably about 2 years old by now, and the wise men have tricked you. They didn't really trick them. God directed them. But here you have an issue where the king gets mad and he says, okay, go out and kill every child 2 years and under, because I will be the king of the Jews. His life isn't much longer. Herod the Great. How about Herod the Greedy? You think of the mothers that lost their children, all because one man wanted to keep his power. Do you know why most things in this world are done? It's because people want to maintain their power. And I really thought about that this week. These are innocent children that did nothing wrong. And yet, because of a godless king, they were needlessly murdered. In the famous words of Dr. Lee, my Old Testament teacher in Bible college, going to look at some theological truths. Dr. Lee's no longer with us. He's in the presence of Christ. But let's look at what we learned from this. First of all, Christ is to be worshipped. Every ounce of this text points to worship. It is used three times. And when we look at the Magi, there's two ways to worship. When we look at the Magi, they had faith that is rarely seen in the New Testament. And yet they are not even talked about in the realm of faith. Think about their faith, brothers and sisters. Think about this. They saw a star leading them to a faraway country, and they had the faith to follow that star against all adversities. They followed it because they knew the significance of the star. It's ironic. Their faith is actually part of their worship. We have people on Sunday morning that can't get up and drive 10 miles to worship Christ for 1 hour. And yet we have wise men who were pagans who knew that this was a special event and that this was a king that was going to be born, and they wanted to worship. Wow. And we have Herod's worship. Herod's worship was false worship, and it was self-centered, and it had nothing to do with worship. Let me ask you a question. Why'd you come today? I think it's a good question to ask. Because ultimately, worship is giving all of ourselves to God. And by the way, not only did we see the faith of the Magi, the worship of the Magi inwardly, but did you notice that the Magi gave gifts? Those are three elements in worship. Faith, heart, and giving. All three of those are present. So when we come to church, we need to, I put it down here, check our hearts to make sure that when we come to worship Christ, that we are exhibiting the faith that would please Christ, that our hearts would be right with Him. And why we have come, are we coming to be seen by men? Are we coming just because this is what we do, we go to church on Sunday? Or are we here to worship Christ with all of our hearts? It's a good question. And do we give? And I'm not talking about just financially. I'm talking about, do we support the ministries of the church? Do we do those things? That's real worship. So when you look at this text, if you want to know the essential elements of worship, look to the wise men. Wow. Here's another thing that we learn from this text. God provides for His people. Did He not provide direction for the wise men? Of course, today it's a little easier for us because we have who living inside of us? We have the Holy Spirit. God provided protection. He told the wise men, do not go back. He also provided protection for Joseph and Mary. There's Herod seeking to kill your child. I remember years ago in Bible college, Marcus Carraway, I'll never forget him. One day in class, he was talking and was in Dr. Windsor's class. Dr. Windsor was just unbelievable. I just loved him so much. He made us think about preaching from a whole different angle. And I just loved it. It got me all excited. Just preach. I loved it because he got me excited about it. One day in class, Dr. Windsor was taking prayer requests, and Marcus Carraway raised his hand and said, I don't really have a prayer request, but I have a praise. I was driving on the interstate, and all of a sudden, it just started downpouring. I lost control of the car, and he said, I went into the median, and he said, my heart was going like this. He said, I thought I was going to die, and then all of a sudden, the car stopped, and I was fine. And he said he protected me. And Dr. Windsor, in so much wisdom in that man, he looked at Marcus Carraway and he said this, that's one you knew about. Brothers and sisters, God protects us. And there may have been times that you went a different direction in the car and you would have taken that direction and God said, no, I'm going to protect you. There's other times in your life that God protects you by giving you what you don't want. And there's other times that God will give you, when you ask God for something, He won't give it to you to protect you. But ultimately, our lives are in His hands. He protects us. That's all the way throughout. He also provides provisions. Joseph and Mary were given three extremely wonderful gifts. How many of you have been the recipients of wonderful gifts? I know I have throughout my time in ministry. I remember one deacon in one church, he pulled me aside and he said, Pastor, let's go out and have lunch. I said, okay. So I went out and had, I'm not turning down food. I'm just not doing it. He slid an envelope across the table at me and I said, what's this? He said, just something. And I opened it up and there was $1,000 in it. And I was like, you sure you got the right guy? I'll take it. With $1,000. We've all been recipients of gifts like that. This congregation has given us all kinds of gifts. Matter of fact, we enjoyed one the other night at Steakhouse. Check it out on Facebook. Does God provide for you? We should praise him for that. God provides for his people. He has provided Jesus Christ, who went to the cross, paid for our sin. He has provided salvation for you. He has provided eternal security for you. He has provided for your families, your home, everything that you have. That's been given to you by God. What a great God that we worship this morning. What a wonderful God that we serve, who provides us with all that we need and protects us and keeps us and watches over us. Sometimes doesn't give us what we want because it's not good for us. But at all times, God is good to us, isn't he? He's good to us. This is the third one, and this is the, I think, one of the best ones. Mankind is unable to thwart the plans of God. Here, Herod, I'm going to take this child out, and in fact, did not do that. Why? Because it was God's plan. From the foundations of the world, God knew that he would send Jesus, knew that he would go to the cross, knew that he would pay for the sins of the world, knew that he would redeem those who had faith and put trust in him and relied on him wholly and solely, and that God would give the Holy Spirit. God was not going to let that plan fail, no matter who came against him. I love Job. Job is somebody that can talk about God's plans. And it wasn't very good in the beginning. I know that you can do all things. No plans of yours can be thwarted. You look at our world today, brothers and sisters, and you think, where is God? I can tell you exactly where God is. God is orchestrating world events to the conclusion of his plan. I could care less who is on the throne in what country and what part of the world and what horrific act is being done. I can tell you that man is foolishly falling into the plans of God. So when they threaten to kill Christians in thousands, I'm telling you that God is on the throne. He is in control. And by the way, every time the church is persecuted, it grows by leaps and bounds. God will have his plan completed. And by the way, I would say this is also. Many are the plans in the mind of man, but it is the purpose of the Lord that will stand. Let me leave you this morning with something very comforting. He that began a good work in you will bring it to completion until the day of Christ. When you think life is not working out exactly according to the script that you wrote, just remember this. We can plan whatever we want. And there's nothing wrong with plans. But I will tell you ultimately this. God will have his way in your life. So when you submit your plans to God and say, God, this is how I want my life to go, God will take those plans and he will go, but I have something much better. Much better. Not your boss, not your employer, not whoever you work with, not people who are against you, friends that are with you. Nobody can thwart God's plan for redeeming the world, and nobody can thwart God's plan for you and your life. He who began a good work in you will bring it to completion until the day of Christ. Christ is to be worshipped, not just Sunday, by the way, every day. God provides for your needs and mine every day, and mankind is unable to stop or thwart the plans of God.